Case number 20 in the Shoyoroku. Dai Tsang's most intimate. The case reads, Dai Tsang asked Fa Yen, "Where are you going?" Fa Yen said, "Around on pilgrimage." Dai Tsang said, "What is the purpose of pilgrimage?" Fa Yen said, "I don't know." Dai Tsang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Fa Yen was suddenly enlightened. The two protagonists here are Dai Tsang Gui Chen, whose Japanese name is Jizo. His dates are 869 to 928 in the Common Era. Fa Yen Wen Yi, Hogen in Japanese, lived from 885 to 958. This puts them at the very end of the Tang era of China. Gui Chen was called Lohan Gui Chen because he was of Lohan Temple in Zhang province. But prior to that, he had spent a year at Dai Tsang Temple near Min City. Dai Tsang Temple is where our story takes place, and that since that seems to be the name by which he was best known, that's what we'll call him. Dai Tsang was a disciple and Dharma heir of Xuan Sha, one of the most distinguished students of the prolific Xue Feng. This makes him a kind of Dharma nephew of Yunmen, that's Uman in Japanese, and Ruiyan, Zuigan. Fa Yen, whom we see here as a student, is generally regarded as the founder of the fifth and last house of Chan. But he is considered by many, including probably himself, as one who continued and enlarged the house of Xuan Sha, his Dharma grandfather. In fact, on some lineage charts, the Fa Yen house is shown as actually beginning not with Fa Yen, but with Xuan Sha. Fa Yen was one of those Zen masters who became ordained at a very early age. He was about 7 years old. He became a scholar with a great love of learning throughout his life and read widely in the literature of all the Buddhist sects, as well as the Confucian classics. He spent his early years with the Vinaya master, but for some reason he decided to travel south and seek out a Chan teacher. One day, Fa Yen and some companions were caught in a snowstorm just outside Dai Tsang Monastery and had to seek shelter there. One of those coincidences that may or may not be. As he was warming himself by the fire, the abbot, Dai Tsang, asked him, "Where are you going?" Fa Yen said, "Around on pilgrimage." Dai Tsang said, "What is the purpose of pilgrimage?" Fa Yen said, "I don't know." Dai Tsang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." And it is said, as in this koan, that Fa Yen came to awakening at that moment. Dai Tsang asked Fa Yen, "Where are you going? What are you up to? Who are you?" really? Where do you stand in this world of coming and going, life and death, good and evil? How many times has the Zen traveler been greeted in this way? And what answer shall we give? Do we try to impress the master with some kind of Zen answer? Do we just answer in the worldly way? What do we do? One student shouts, "Cuts!" and is calmly rejected by Mu Zhou. Another says, "Oh, I was at such and such a place for the summer ango and was raked over the coals by young men." Fa Yen says, "I'm going about on pilgrimage." What kind of an answer is that? Has he avoided a trap? Or has he fallen into one? Is there really a trap? If there is a trap, did the master set it? Or do we set it ourselves? Dai Tsang presses further. What is the purpose of this wandering, this pilgrimage? What do you expect to get out of it? Purposes, expectations, meaning, intention. What is the purpose of your pilgrimage? What is the purpose of our travels and travails in this life? Well, that's the real question, isn't it? You go into Doksan and demonstrate your practice or your koan. But what if the teacher asks of your demonstration? And what good is that? How will you answer? Why do you practice? What do you expect from your zazen? Where are you going, and what do you expect when you get there? Why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell? Why do you wander from west of the river to south of the lake? What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the west? Dai Tsang echoes a question, the question that I suspect has driven most, if not all of us, to practice. Is there a purpose to anything? What the hell am I doing here? What is it all about? What is that purpose of your life? If someone asked you that question, how would you answer? Goals? Success? A family? Happiness? Or maybe worst of all, enlightenment? Or do we really wander at random? And purpose is nothing but a rationalization after the fact for what has already happened. However it turns out, I must have planned it that way. The Emperor of China built temples and monasteries, commissioned the translations of sutras, but when he asked Bodhidharma what merit he had acquired in all this, Bodhidharma replied, "No merit whatever." If there is no merit in such monumental works, then what are the chances of Fa Yen's aimless wandering? Or our aimless wandering? And you and me, what good is all our zazen, our involvement with the temple? What good is our work for the poor, participation in the peace movement? Zazen, rituals and liturgy of sutra or koan study, of keeping the precepts of samu, mindfulness practices. Commenting on case number 37 in the Wumenguan, Shibayama Roshi writes, Master Rinzai, being asked by his disciple, what is the meaning of the patriarchs coming from the West, said, if there is any meaning at all, you can never save yourself. If there is a purpose to your practice, to your zazen, you're lost. If you say there is no purpose, you are also lost. Dai Tsang said, what is the purpose of pilgrimage? Fa Yen said, I don't know. What about that answer? I don't know. Is it adequate? Does it truly demonstrate an understanding? Or is it a little too generic? If you say, I don't know, what are you saying? When the emperor asked Bodhidharma, who stands before me? Bodhidharma replied, I don't know. Compare and contrast Bodhidharma's I don't know with that of Fa Yen. Are they the same? Are they different? What do we know about our lives, our practice, and ourselves? I know that I'm this or that, a husband or wife, parent or child, man, woman, citizen of such and such a country, resident of this city or that. I know that I am the owner of a house or a car, furniture, clothing, appliances, stuff. I know that I am a teacher, student, electrician, architect, laborer, dishwasher, house cleaner, physician, investor, engineer, and so on. And on and on. I know that the earth is round and that it orbits around the sun, that the nucleus of the atom contains protons and neutrons. I know that there is war and suffering and dying in many, many different places. I know all sorts of things. But all this is a fragile kind of knowing. It is subject to all the winds of change. It takes very little to blow it all away, to shake this knowing to pieces. And what happens if we lose that knowing? Suppose you do some genealogical research and discover to your amazement that your father is not your father. He's your stepfather. And further, you find out that your real father is in jail for murder or arson. Suddenly, your origins have changed beyond all recognition. Does that mean that suddenly you are a different person? How does this change your knowing? Or something simpler and more common. For many years, I was a biology teacher. Then I retired. I was once a homeowner. Then I sold my house. What happened? Am I a different person? Have I lost something? And what about our knowing the future? How many can say truly that their life plan, made at age 20, came to fruition exactly as predicted? How many accurately predicted even 5 years ago that you would be sitting here in this zendo today? Our lives can certainly feel like we are wandering at random. But I suspect to say that wandering at random is just another way of saying that we don't know. If one considers the infinite causes that have culminated in the effect that we are here right now, we cannot tease out any specific chain of events that led us here. But that does not mean it was a random or senseless process. Cause and effect exist, but our life is predictable only in that we know it will end in death at some point. But we have no clue when or where we will arrive at that point or under what circumstances. The pursuit of this usual kind of knowing is ultimately fruitless. That knowing is actually a limitation and a separation from reality, separation from our true, not knowing nature. Is there then a different kind of knowing? A knowing that is not subject to the suffering of change, birth, old age, sickness, and death? Yes, there is. It is the transcendent knowing that we seek here in this Zendo and in all aspects of our practice. Where does this knowing come from, and how do we approach it in our practice? We approach it through not knowing. What is that? It is the not knowing of anything and everything. It begins with Fa Yen's, I don't know. A tree does not know that it is a tree. Would knowing in the usual sense make it more of a tree or a better tree? Does the sky know that it is the sky? Do our hands know they are hands? Does the carpet in front of you know that it is a carpet? Do walking, standing, and sitting know that they are walking, standing, and sitting? Does your pain know that it is pain? Does our zazen know that it is zazen? Look around you. Not knowing is everywhere. Look within. Thoughts do not know they are thoughts. Knowing does not know that it is knowing. Not knowing does not know that it is not knowing. This not knowing can feel strange, even frightening. We are sometimes terrified of not knowing. To know is to live, and to live is to know. Not knowing is a loss of self, of identity, of our separateness. Not knowing is a kind of dying. This is something that can happen in Sesshin. Suddenly or gradually, there is a loss of knowing, and there is a vague kind of puzzlement, a feeling of strangeness that may escalate even into an existential panic. This not knowing is a crucial step toward liberation. It is knowing that is the trap, the cage. Dai Tsang says to Fa Yen, not knowing is most intimate. Most intimate. The not knowing that Dai Tsang speaks of is not that which stands against knowing. Nanjuan made clear to Zhao Zhou, ordinary mind goes beyond knowing or not knowing. This is the not knowing of the trees, stars, rivers, mountains, birds, sunlight, wind, clouds, rain, snow, children playing, the cry of a newborn baby. It is also the not knowing of atomic bombs over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the suffering and dying in Kosovo, Iraq, Rwanda, New Orleans, Madagascar, New York City. Zhao Zhou's favorite quote seems to have been from Sung Chan's verse on the faith mind. The great way is not difficult. It just avoids picking and choosing. Picking and choosing can't happen without knowing. Neither can fear, desire, or hatred. All of these have knowing as a prerequisite. This not knowing contains within it that deep and limitless knowing that we sometimes call prajna. Please understand, this not knowing is not about emptiness, and it is not about form. Someone once asked Robert Aitken Roshi, now in his 80s and in poor health, how he felt about dying. He answered, like Peter Pan, about to embark on another adventure. I bet the only reason he could say that is that he looks at living in that same way, as a new adventure, every moment. This is what not knowing can do for you. Every moment is an adventure, an intimate adventure. Not knowing is most intimate. Now, it is said that with these words, Fa Yen came to awakening. Well, it begins with that, but it does not end there. Dai Tsang was not yet done with him. When the snow stopped, Fa Yen got ready to leave, and Dai Tsang accompanied him to the gate of the monastery and asked him, you say that the three worlds are only mind and the myriad things are only consciousness. Then he pointed to a rock in the garden and said, but tell me, is this rock inside your mind or outside your mind? Fa Yen said, it is inside my mind. Dai Tsang said, what reason does a traveler have to put a rock in his head? Fa Yen put down his bundle and stayed. Suppose that Fa Yen had said again, I don't know. Would Dai Tsang have let him off the hook? I don't think so. For over a month, every day, Fa Yen presented his new views and new reasons to the master, and every day Dai Tsang said, the Buddha Dharma is not like that. And some of you people think you have it rough in Doksan. At last, Fa Yen came to the master and said, my words are exhausted. My reason come to an end. Yes, now we come to it. Anybody can say, I don't know. But what does it take to say, I'm at the end. There's nothing left. What do I do? It isn't always necessary to go to the teacher with the answer. It is only necessary to be empty, to have no answers, to have only the question, to be only the question, to be not knowing. In case number 41 in the Wu Men Guan, Bodhidharma faced the wall. The second ancestor stood in the snow, cut up his arm, and said, "Your disciple's mind is not at peace as yet. I beg you, Master, please put it to rest." Bodhidharma said, "Bring me your mind and I will put it to rest." The second ancestor said, "I have searched for this mind, but I cannot find it." Bodhidharma said, "I have completely put it to rest for you." After his long search, the second ancestor was at the end. He did not know. In case number 15 in the Wu Men Guan, Dung Shan came to see Yun Men. Yun Men asked him, "Where were you recently?" Dung Shan said, "At Cha Tu." Yun Men said, "Where were you during the summer?" Dung Shan said, "At Bao Tzu Monastery in Hunan." Yun Men said, "When did you leave there?" Dung Shan said, "August 25th. Yun Men said, "I spare you 60 blows. I spare you 60 blows. That is a complete rejection by the master. Yun Men is in essence saying, "I don't want to work with you, get out." Next day, Dung Shan came again and said, "Yesterday, you said you spared me 60 blows. I don't know where I was at fault." Yun Men said, "You rice bag. Do you go about in such a way, now west of the river, now south of the lake?" With this, Dung Shan had great satori. After a long night, Dung Shan did not know. Fa Yin said, "My words are exhausted. My reason come to an end." Fa Yin's first, "I don't know," was good. But his exhaustion, his end of reason, was better. And Dai Tsang said, "As regards the Buddha Dharma, everything is a present reality." At these words, Fa Yin was greatly enlightened. Everything is the present reality. If you see into these words of Dai Tsang, then you truly understand the purpose of your sitting, your wandering, of your practice, of your life, and you know the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West. Everything is the present reality. As I get older, I often think of another story about Dai Tsang that I first heard Philip Kaplow Roshi tell during a Taisho. I think about it more as I grow older, and I view it with wonder, and yes, a little envy. Once when Dai Tsang had requested everyone to work in the fields, there Yang Shan asked, "Here is so low, there is so high." Dai Tsang said, "Water can level things, just level them with water." Yang Shan said, "Even water has nothing to depend on, teacher. The high places are just high level, the low places are low level." Di Tsang said, "So it is." It would be difficult to imagine a greater contentment than that of these two old Buddhas standing in the field leaning on their hose and just enjoying, taking joy in that which is. Not knowing is most intimate. And in this deep not knowing, everything is the present reality. So practice now with a mind that does not know and does not seek to know. The breath does not know it is the breath. Mu does not know that it is mu. Zazen does not know it is zazen. This true not knowing prajna is all around you. It is within you, and it is you yourself. Together with all beings, we realize Buddhahood.